Broadcasting from Fort Hill College, this is KFKC Los Altos Hills.
Celebrating Delia Derbyshire's 82nd birthday.
I'd like to believe in God, but I'm afraid I can't. I find that the whole conception of a divine being is really an easy way out for most people. Avoidance of personal responsibility, a passing of all decisions to somebody else. There are so many things within the idea of religion which are contradictory. And the basic morality of religion seems to leave much to be desired.
Although I could bring myself to believe it intellectually, I somehow can't feel it emotionally.
I can't see that it helps anyone.
I think it's all superstition.
I feel that I cannot look to any sublime being for guidance in my own life.
I cannot believe that there is someone up there who has any kind of personal contact with me as a human being.
As a good and honest atheist, I think the whole thing's nonsense. I can't imagine any reasonable way of thinking it possible, provable, or even reasonable. I think the whole thing's nonsense.
A superstition.
Unacceptable.
It's a bit ridiculous.
Who's interested?
Why is it wrong to question?
It's like talking on a phone when it's, there's no one at the other end of it to me.
Who listens to them?
It doesn't do anything for me.
Who's interested?
It doesn't solve anything, and it doesn't even make me feel any better.
If there is a creator, someone who started the universe off, I'm sure he's not interested in people like us.
I can't pray to someone because for me there isn't anyone there.
God is a superstition.
A social ritual for weak people who can't think for themselves.
The idea of there being some sort of great grandpappy up there looking down and looking after me seems, to say the least of it, a bit ridiculous.
Can't believe in such a person.
The contradictions are too great.
The whole thing is, it's irrelevant to anything I could imagine.
I can't accept the idea of a supreme being who takes any interest in anyone on Earth.
I feel that we're living in this world and it's the world that's going to help us.
I don't think I feel any of the religious attitudes supposed at all. I don't really feel any life force flowing through everything, animating it and me, making the universe meaningful.
Now, I don't believe that you can pray and your prayers will be answered and your sins forgiven and so on.
I don't believe God created a world at all. I think it's just a burnt-out planet, like all the rest.
I don't believe in the Christian concept of a God. To me, this is quite unacceptable.
A social ritual.
Avoidance of personal responsibility.
I think the whole thing's nonsense.
And yet, in a way, I envy the person who can pass this responsibility to an almighty being, because then they're not ultimately responsible for their own mistakes, their own human elements of greed or desire or envy. or any of the other things we all contend with in our daily life.
It's in the world and in worldly terms that one has to sort out one's life.
It's impossible to pray to life or expect it to answer you.
It doesn't solve anything, and it doesn't even make me feel any better.
Life is something which you are living all the time. Something which you are living all the time.
I would very much like to have a faith, to have the comfort of a religion, but I'm afraid I can't. The contradictions within religion are too great for me to accept. There are so many things within the idea of religion which are contradictory.
I wish you could believe in God.
I can see no good reason why I should.
You're missing the thing that makes life most worth living.
I believe you must believe.
I see no good reason why I should.
Because God is within you and is created, actually, by yourself to a certain extent.
Because it's a much more comforting state to be in.
Because even people who deny him when they're in trouble or when they're facing death even, call on him.
Because he is someone that you can tell all your troubles to.
Believing in God is the natural thing to do.
He certainly will help you if you pray earnestly.
God is the ultimate truth in life.
God is life eternal.
God is goodness.
God is life.
God is love.
God is love.
God is all good. Everything good is God.
You get double happiness from belonging to him.
And the person that can really say that I believe in God and have that faith is a very happy person.
Blessedness is the highest thing a man can attain to.
And the sooner you realize what you're missing, the better for you.
Can't believe in such a person.
It doesn't do anything for me.
I can't see that it helps anyone.
I think it's all superstition.
It doesn't solve anything, and it doesn't even make me feel any better.
The whole thing is, it's irrelevant to anything I could imagine.
I'd like to believe in God.
I think that you really must believe in something, but you're not aware of it. And I think that if you were completely unbelieving, you'd be very sterile.
You'd be missing an extra dimension.
You're separating yourself from life.
Your life would be flat.
You're not feeling part of it.
It would be lacking in depth.
Your contact with life would be dimensionless.
You have no purpose in life. I think
you're missing an awful lot.
You wouldn't be missing anything because you wouldn't be aware of the possibility.
Do you want to be in the kingdom of God? Or do you want to be left out amongst all the, as the Bible speaks of, dogs and sorcerers and warmongers and liars.
You're losing a tremendous lot.
A tremendous lot of help in this life to help you to live and to live for others. You'd lose such a lot of graces that you could have.
How can you expect to make a success of your life if you deny or have nothing to do with God?
I can't understand anybody not believing in God.
One has to believe in God. if you don't believe in God, you really don't know what you are missing.
I'm afraid I can't.
Sometime or other, it must come back to you. It must come back to you.
Believing in God is the natural thing to do.
Because God is within you.
He's inside everyone for everyone to find.
He's in yourself.
It's something inside you.
Something which makes flowers grow and coordinates the heavens and keeps everything together and keeps everything going.
It must come back to you in a certain time, at some time in your life. It must come back to you that there is a God.
There must be a God.
There is a God.
To me, this is quite unacceptable. All the rituals and ceremonies that we go through, all this seems to me to be just for the comfort of man himself. I can understand that you can get some kind of comfort from it, and even that maybe your prayers will be answered. But for me, this is meaningless.
It seems that we're looking upon this figure purely because we have lack of responsibility in our own aims and deeds and acts, and this seems to me impossible. It is one's own responsibility as to how one acts, the thought of the right things to do and the wrong things to do, without fear of being condemned to hell or even being rewarded by going to heaven. To me, the actions and work of every day, the beauty of life itself, nature, trees, animals, is in a sense God, because that is the spirit of life. And yet that incorporates in itself the bad things, the sickness, the worms, the fungi, the mole on the trees. It's all part of life, and we accept life as it is, and live it as it is, without any ultimate being forced upon us.
If you don't believe in God, then you don't know the comfort of prayer.
A person without religion must be aimless and drifting.
They miss such a lot, I think.
They must miss everything in life.
Or you might just will be dead.
They are just miserable sinners, and they cannot be happy.
You might just will be dead.
Let us go back to the late 50s, early 60s. Dave Brubeck had done Take Five, and perhaps about 61 he'd done It's a Raggy Waltz. So that was in Seven Time. And so I thought, fine, I'm into the numbers game. I'll do 11 Time and 13 Time, continuing the series of prime numbers. But unfortunately, that style
I was told, was too sophisticated for the BBC Two audience. And so as I was doing it, the choreographer, Irving Davis, happened to be walking down the corridor, and his feet started tapping, and he said, "I want that." And I said, "No, you can't. I've done it for the BBC." And so he implored me to do something in the same style, in 11 time and 13 time, for his dance group, which I did. And in fact, it was the Frankie Howard and Cilla Black show it was originally done for, but it had to be scrapped from that because it did the stupid thing of putting this rather delicate music as an opener to the second act. That was their problem. I didn't have a television in those days, but a friend told me, but by one means or another, it ended up used as a backing for a deodorant commercial on television. Which is something, of course, we were absolutely forbidden to do, but it was nothing of my doing. It was rejected by BBC Two, and there it was on a commercial.
The changing movement of an object, as I'm doing on the computer, was quite foreign to Greek and to Islamic minds. They looked always for what is unchanging and static, a timeless world of perfect order. The most perfect shape to them was the circle. Motion must run smoothly and uniformly in circles. That was the music of the spheres. That's why the Ptolemaic system was built up of circles along which time ran uniformly and imperturbably. But movements in the real world are not uniform, and they cannot be analyzed with the mathematics of antiquity. That's a theoretical problem in the heavens, but it's practical and immediate here on Earth. In the flight of a projectile, in the spurting growth of a plant, in the single splash of a drop of liquid that goes through abrupt changes of shape and direction. The Renaissance did not have the technical equipment to stop the picture frame instant by instant. But the Renaissance had the intellectual equipment, the inner eye of the painter, and the logic of the mathematician. That's how Kepler, after the year 1600, became convinced that the motion of a planet is not circular and not uniform. It's an ellipse along which the planet runs at varying
speeds.
I did actually have a letter from you, dear, in which you said that you had a demo of one of your songs recorded by Anthony Newley. Now, that's something I would love to hear.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'd quite like to find it. He came to my little one-room flat above a flower shop in Maid of Ale to hear the backing track he'd asked me to do. He said, "Don't put a tune on it, because I'm going to write my own tune, but I'd like a backing track, an electronic music backing track." And so he said, "You'll probably want to put on your own tune just to make some sense of the whole thing, but I'm not going to use it." Anyway, he took it away, and not only did he use it, he double-tracked it. He was thrilled to bits with it. He said, and I felt quite insulted at the time, he said, "I'll soon get you out of this little place." In fact, the people who'd driven him there were Joan and Jackie Collins.
It's raining, it's pouring, the old man's snoring, a little sad in my head plate, mate, a little grey coming through, a little down in the mouth plate, mate. Rain keeps falling, no one's calling. I tell you straight, kid, I'm in a state, kid. I've got the moojis, the dreaded bloojis. La 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 la. And it doesn't help when you watch them floating by, and those little mini skirts, little pink knees winking away, wild hair lolloping about in the wind, and those mad earrings and the clown faces, and that gear, they're hip-hugged and plastic-macked, they're goggled and helmeted, booted and spurred. Thank God I can control myself. A little dream in my heart place, face. A little scene tucked away in my memory. A little girl and me went case, face. Rain kept falling, she stopped calling. Do you think she's lonely and thinks about me? I've got the moojis, the dreaded bloojis. A little girl just walked by me, see. A little smile in her eye, here we go again. A little rise in my blood rate, mate. It stopped raining, who's complaining? Goodbye, moojis, bye-bye, bloojis. Oh, excuse me, sweetheart. My friend and I are having an argument. He says you're a fashion model, I say you're a film star. And as there's a few quid now, I wanted it. Oh, by the way,
Nya lyotum pizza krul nyen much. I decoded you today. As you came off the computer, clean and clear, no interference, hardly any static, excellent woof, no tweet, the memory of you came rushing back. Purple smear lips on moon-faced girl, rainbow hair. Your rosy confines a universe of flashing stars and golden sunsets. You, a peacock sky of flashing light. Take a little breath and blow it out again. See it make a balloon. Suddenly I see there in front of me, words are forming in that little capsule, saying, "Darling, I love you. Darling, please be true. Won't you ever turn and read the message that is floating round about my ear? Oh, take a little sigh and blow it out again. See it hang on the breeze. Suddenly it's there, floating on the air. Look inside and you will see the heart that you have broken with your foolish pride. I hope you're satisfied."
Thank you.
Of Egypt Program 1, which goes from 0 feet to 155. In fact, there is rather more than you need here, about 2.5 minutes. Maybe you'd like to fit it where it fits.
Thank you.
stage in the realization of a piece of music is to construct the individual sounds that we're going to use. To do this, we can, if we like, go to these sound generators here, electronic generators, and we'll listen to three of the basic electronic sounds. First, there's the simplest sound of all, which is a sine wave. As you see on the oscilloscope, it has a very simple form and has a very pure sound. Now listen to the same note, but with a different quality. This is a square wave. You see, it's very square on the picture, and it's perhaps rather harsh to listen to. This is because it has a lot of high harmonics, and that's what gives the corners on the picture. A more complex sound still is white noise. But those basic sounds aren't really interesting in their raw state like this. To make them of value for a musical piece, we have to shape them and mould them. But using all of these, we can build up any sound we can possibly imagine almost. We spend quite a lot of time trying to invent new sounds, I mean sounds that don't exist already, sounds that can't be produced by musical instruments. But we don't always go to electronic sound generators for our basic sources of sound. If the sound we want exists already in real life, say, we can go and record it. The sound I want for the rhythm of this piece needs to be a very short, dry, hollow wooden sound I can get from this. And then the sound for the punctuating chords, I want the sound of a short wire string being plucked. That's at the speed we recorded in the studio. We can get the lower sounds we need from the rhythm by slowing down the tape. And the higher sounds by speeding up the tape. These particular pitches we can record on this machine here. And then all we have to do is cut the notes to the right length. We can join them together on a loop and listen to them. And then with the higher notes of the rhythm, again we join them together on a loop and play it in synchronization with the first tape. And over this we can play the sound of the plucked string, which can be either in the form of a loop like this, that's the synchronization, or in the form of a band on a tape. Now is one method in which we synchronize tapes of electronic sounds with each other. But another technique is to combine a tape of electronic sounds with the playing of live musicians.
Thank you. It's the individual building blocks, and it's the way music, electronic music and popular music, is put together as a matter of course anyway, track by track. In these days, as we said with the Doctor Who theme, there were no multi-track recorders, so everything was a separate strip of tape and then manually synchronised at the end. But again, it was a pioneering use of the technology that was available to create virtual multi-tracks at the time, so that one person could put together an entire piece, you know, single-person orchestration, one-man band type of thing.
One of the elements of the dance from Noah has a very strange quality to it. It was composed in the late 60s, we know, but it sounds like something that could be danced to in a club right now. David Butler from Manchester University.
When the archive was first announced in July 2008, several short extracts from the archive were played on the BBC, on PN. And the one that got the most astonishing reaction was the extract we played of the rhythm track of the Dance from Noah. Within 24 hours, we were inundated with emails from all around the world. In America, there's a forum about digital music, and there was somebody posting on there, and they'd called hoax, and believed that this thing, you know, couldn't possibly have been done in 1971, that the technology wasn't available, that Dealey wasn't working in that style or whatever. And so I went on there and was sort of explaining, no, it's genuine, it's legitimate. So that particular piece seems to have sent shockwaves around the sort of electronic music community. And I think you can hear why.
Thank you.
as well.
Well, you know,
yes.
Perhaps yes.
And,
well, speaking personally,
I feel that.
Talk out.
Thank you.